Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Hey, hi, episode 028 of the Daughter of Godcast. We're back and about to unpack more treasure from the vault, starting back where we left off last week, spring of 2011. We've dug out about 7 years of ancient history, and six more will bring us up to nowish. So don't worry, there's still plenty of podcast ahead. Right here in 2017, I bumped into one of my genius interns from back then, and having not seen each other since about 2013 or so, we had a catch-up in Oriana while I scarfed a tempeh Reuben sandwich and a flagon of tomato soup. I also ran into Tanya from episode 025, skateboard guru Tyler, and in-lovers Jesse and Gwynin, who have taken over Keanu Reeves' Airstream tonight after romping in the Sleeping Bear. Just a typical afternoon in the Coincidence Control Cafe. Cody was my last intern before I threw in the towel on mentoring high school kids, and a smidgen of his roto work survives in the current version of Dog. In 2008, Michigan had one of the top three film incentive programs in the USA, championed by Governor Jennifer Granholm. When Rick Snyder took office, changes were made to the incentive in 2011 that didn't protect existing deals, so the big studios took their projects elsewhere. Having invested in Michigan and been burned, Hollywood was now wary of our unpredictable incentives, and the torrent of high-end cinematic opportunity was gradually pinched off. One version of the backstory involves Michael Moore, a fixture in Traverse City. Conservative Michigan legislators viewed Hollywood as Moore's crowd, and the last thing they wanted was to encourage rival political influence in the state. Michael Moore showed up in Traverse City and helped save the historic State Theater and pretty much all of downtown from irrelevance. When he launched the Traverse City Film Festival in 2005, rabid regional conservatives retaliated with a sort of freedom festival, which disappeared after the first year. After a brief flowering, 2011 marked the beginning of the end of Michigan's subsidized cinematic renaissance. IEFX's Traverse City office from episode 027 came and went, blindsided by political machinations. Even if Jonathan and I had been hired there, we would have been SOL within a year. But regional independent filmmakers were too excited to read the writing on the wall. We were Michigan's new economic juggernaut. Michigan movie makers. James Weston and I had reconstituted the Michigan movie makers for at least the third time. Before James, M3 had an incarnation in the 70s. Our 2011 incarnation met for the first time at the Traverse Area District Library on June 22nd, and 20 or so movers and shakers showed up, including Michael Moore's chief Valkyrie, Deb, who encouraged us all to volunteer for the Traverse City Film Festival just a month away. My trusty nephew Patrick was there, and my first intern, Louise, who was too shy to introduce herself. Other notables included Jeff Gibbs, David Merrick, Andrea Mayo, Andrew McFarlane, Scott Tompkins, Joe Carter, Matt Kine, Damon Knight, and Brad Canaan. Iconic filmmaker Rich Brower even made a cameo to offer his blessings and encouragement. James announced our first initiative, the Micro Movie Marathon, a festival of 3 minute or less movies solicited from every niche of the regional movie ecosystem. From student to pro, a sort of inventory of our production power.
Oh, dear.
She's dead. And I'm looking for a place to put her in the ground.
Well, this is it.
Stop and attack her.
Dog parks don't just bring pets together.
An invisible force field.
Did the editors at that time show as much lovely midriff as you're showing today?
Shortly after the ambitious relaunching of our affinity group, my rabbit brother and partner in crime, James Weston, announced he was moving to Montana to take a job as a carrot, leaving me to herd those movie cats all by myself. That's a lie. Everyone chipped in. But it was pretty much me. Okay, well, and there's a lot of other people too. But mostly me. And other people. And me. Doing most of the work. And other people helping. Okay. We launched our web presence and met monthly to build our community, network, and self-educate. We swelled the volunteer ranks of the Traverse City Film Festival, pulled off the first hilarious micro-movie marathon, learned about and supported local projects, hired each other, facilitated mentoring programs and internships, and did robust community outreach. Establishing a searchable resource database was one of M3's organizing goals. Jeff Gibbs offered a lot of great and occasionally annoying advice. He emphasized audience over creators and sold me on the practice of test screenings. We attended several together at the State Theater. Jeff also donated a pump organ to my trove of useful post-civilization collapse technology. I brought it home strapped to a Hobie 16 trailer. The Traverse City Record Eagle discovered the Michigan Movie Makers on July 31st. Managing this affinity group was a huge distraction from my own projects. But after years solo screen staring for Daughter of God and producing two expeditions of Around Lake Michigan, I realized having help was optimal. I needed a team. Patrick had been heavily involved in the reconstruction of Hello World. My nephews and I had pulled off a demo reel together and were pondering how to dive deeper with our mad schemes. People are changeable, even nephews. A few enthusiastic 20-somethings does not a robust production team make, even if they are badass Kellys. I needed a talent pool. The Michigan Movie Makers was my attempt to identify the most reliable and competent collaborators in the region, perhaps even to grow new collaborators, which is how I got involved with taking on interns from the Film and New Media program at the Traverse Bay Area Career Tech Center, and eventually working with Cody. The summer was delicious as always, and what with swimming, forest runs, and facilitating a thriving indie cinema scene in northern Michigan, I didn't get around to my movies until August. Around Lake Michigan required a functional boat, which I currently lacked. Until such time as I healed Hello World, I was landbound. Daughter of God seemed to be the obvious candidate for completion. Before we revive Dog, here's a smattering of eventfuls from the second half of 2011. And here's a smattering of lemonade, green tea, kick-ass rocket fuel with goji berry juice. Ooh. This is how we power through. Power through.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and bright, oh so pretty. Miss America can just resign. Fa la 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 la.
Pretty profits. This next paragraph is one long run-on sentence. Let's see if we can do it. Ready? Several side projects were a bust, like my brilliant bumper for the Traverse City Film Festival, rejected. Forming a dance company with Gretchen Eichberger, failed. And bringing consumer culture to a screeching, crashing halt, not yet. But along with facilitating Michigan Movie Makers, I did have a series of significant slam dunks for pay or strategic gratis, such as the promotional trailer for the Alberta Solstice Festival, music videos for Dee Dee Alder, documentation for Gretchen's Chaotic Harmony, and acquisition of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra's performance of Holst, The Planets. I'm going to call that one good. It's a promotional trailer for the Alberta Solstice Festival.
Could you tell me what you think the highlight has been for you?
It's been a glowing look on people's faces when they bite into a beautiful bratwurst, you know, full of flavor.
Well,
and
yeah.
Crafted.
Oh, yeah. This is not a professional actor, folks.
It's a good prop.
Nice. Nice. Have people been pretty receptive to what you got going on here? Yeah. Are these relatives of yours here? This is like a giant family, isn't it?
This is the latest issue of the Alberta Alert.
Excuse me, but what is the Alberta Alert?
The Alberta Alert is our revived local newspaper, revived in February after 100 years.
And 100 years ago, did the editors at that time show as much lovely midriff as you're showing today? I understand that any female customers who would like a dance can get a dance here as well.
Music videos for Dee Dee Alder.
Right into your arms. Unpacked my bags and spread out my things. Many years went by till I felt the need to be on the move. Moving on. Pack up my suitcase. While I sing this song again on the moon.
Documentation for Gretchen's chaotic harmony.
Milkweed seaweed into the air. Waves skip across sweet water.
As the air is moving.
Capriciously moving. Capricious air.
And acquisition of the Traverse Symphony Orchestra's performance of Holst, The Planets. I also had a brainwave for a top-secret kooky culture jamming project involving a cast of 50 or so. I pitched the idea to Dee Dee and Emily, who were both up for collaboration. My sultry Polish entertainment lawyer, N.S. Smolanski, helped craft very special releases. We scheduled a rehearsal for October, but had to cancel the day prior due to unforeseen complications. 6 years later, this top-secret project has only gotten more intriguing and is somewhere in the master queue, waiting for planetary alignment. Last night, after reviewing the original posts, I had yet another brainwave about an approach that would be a lot easier to organize. Maybe we'll see it this year?
Born free, as free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart.
Instant Family. I test drove parenting for a few days when my girlfriend left the country and put me in charge of her 5-year-old daughter, Star. I had help from Dee Dee, but by and large, I got my ass kicked. I like kids a lot and was willing to try, so I'm giving myself an A for effort. You know, breaking up with girlfriends who've got kids means there's way more people to miss. Uncle Jack. Remember Jack, my father's brother from way back in episode 002, who was miffed at my ironic war signage? He died in August, transitioned or re-emerged into pure positive energy, as you prefer. I remember the fun I had with Jack when I first moved to Beulah in the late 80s. Barbara Jo Steele and I making dinner with him, breaded perch cooked in an iron skillet over the fire cauldron by the lake. Watching Forbidden Planet and 2001, A Space Odyssey with him, and my pals Mark and Bob. Jack had personally worked to transmute ICBMs into space exploration vessels, as described in episode 015. I'm so glad he's not mad at me anymore. The Shack. My nephew Patrick had a dream of building and racing Baja cars. He needed a workshop. I was also hungry for a fabrication space. Hello World's reconstruction had happened mostly in and around my garage, and I'd often climbed into bed with minute glass fibers embedded in my tender hide. The shack was a mouse-infested outbuilding on my family's farm that was packed with random crap. Patrick and I decided to clear out and renovate this building to realize a collaborative shop for our various mad schemes. Since our ambitions were vast and fluid, we wanted the space to be as flexible as possible and envisioned having all our equipment and shelves on heavy-duty wheels so the space could be reconfigured to suit any situation. As with all projects, this one had a few unexpected twists. Engineering plans were drawn up, a new slab and footings for lolly columns installed, and the roof reinforced. The carpenters didn't realize the exterior cedar siding encapsulated much older asbestos panels. They drilled about 40 soffit vents, contaminating the entire building with asbestos. We had to have environmental testing, remediate the whole space with a coat of paint, and then test again. Sheesh. Africans. In September, Daughter of God's arranger and his lovely wife and their two little girls rode Amtrak from Penn Station to Kalamazoo, where I picked them up for their first Michigan vacation. I had a blast with Endon and Cecile and the girls. I can't describe how wonderful having my New Yorkers in the Michigan crib felt. Especially after having Anastasia here in the spring, such an excellent family I have. Postapalooza. In October, Steve Julin organized a conference for production and post professionals, Postapalooza in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Heavily attended by academics, we've got a lot of colleges and universities in Michigan, and a smattering of indie geeks like myself. I got to hang with my heroes, Trish and Chris Myers, authors of After Effects Apprentice and Creating Motion Graphics with After Effects. Heaven. Artist House. After decades of squatting, paying rent sporadically, funding significant repairs and radical unauthorized renovations, including a gradual earthship conversion, I negotiated with my family to acquire the Artist House. How lucky can one guy be? My luck knows no limits. Why do atheists love a Christmas party? What would a year-end be without an uproarious Christmas party with lots of dancing and a sleepover? My brothers and sisters even showed up, though they didn't sleep over. We got sleepovers out of our systems after living together for 18 or so years in Pound Ridge, New York. Here's the party's promotional poetry. When do non-believers dance and feast? Why, December 23rd, my darling beast. Just after the longest, darkest night, Eve's eve of the baby Jay and red guy fight. Sexy humanists have their day for a frolic, a merrymake. Hooray! Come along, yo, and join the fete. Bring a dish to pass, and together we'll get down with DNA, evolution of physics, kiss in the shadows, seduce the mystics with the magic of science and the blessings of life, a dizzy Chautauqua late into the night, gorgeous creatures, moving poems, clever apes, and their crazy coins. No maudlin drunks will be admitted, just the glorious tribe to fun committed. Trust will see you smiling by eight. Bring a sleeping bag and prepare to sate your lust for life, thou humane bee. And remember this number, 23. A Wash in Wildflowers. Posted on August 4th, 2011 by Dan from holyboners.com. A wash in wildflowers and basking in beauty. That's the summer of 2011. Hello World has been beached, blossomed, for a solid year following her crippling injury 30 miles north of Chicago that ended our 2010 expedition. She's communing with the flocks and vetch across the street, waiting for repairs. Patrick and I are converting a storage shed into a workshop, and that's where she'll be before the snow flies. Meanwhile, she's watching over another exploration of sustainability, the Lauren DeCipio Memorial Vegetable Garden. I've followed the weed-free layer cake method with commercial organic soil in some beds and composted horse poop from Willie and Marika Steinstra Church in others. The entire plot is shadowed by the backyard bluff and misses most of the morning sun. The corn patch is growing in a wedge shape. Plants are progressively lower the closer they are to the bluff. There couldn't be a clearer demonstration of solar power. The next expedition of Around Lake Michigan will have to be rethought if it's going to accommodate sailing, movie making, and distribution all at once. After Fukushima, I've been thinking about all those reactors I sailed by. What chance does a powered-down civilization have surrounded by nuclear bombs? 10,000 years of toxic threat seems pretty daunting. Maybe Around Lake Michigan needs a tighter focus. And now, ladies and gentlemen, after many errant episodes, heartbreak, abandonment, and wandering in the wilds, we now return you to our feature attraction. the 11-year saga of a movie almost made. Sequel to the prequel, Act 2, Episode 028, Daughter of God, Resurrection. Because we'll be jumping back and forth between the then and the now, I'm establishing a convention. When you hear the sound effect voice, that's the distant past. And when you hear just me, then that's 2017. 2017 here. In mid-May 2011, I cracked the vault of past projects and peered in. The aesthetic and what's next. Posted on May 13th, 2011 by Dan from holyboners.com. Snip. I think Daughter of God is the priority over around Lake Michigan. Snip. Dog certainly needs plenty of After Effects intervention to get airborne, and that's where the real SFX, or version 0.9, overlaps. I'm clear that motion graphics and SFX figure prominently in both archival and future projects. And what exactly does that look like? What are the critical skills to master? What's the guiding aesthetic? Snip. Keep it simple and subtle has been a cornerstone of the Trickster Pictures SFX VFX architecture. That's both a pragmatic and an aesthetic choice. Pragmatic because we don't yet have the chops or resources to pull off an effects tour de force. Aesthetic because so many mainstream films are effect heavy and content light. Where's the story? Perhaps simple and subtle should be replaced with serving story. That's what we want our SFX VFX to do. On a meta view, it's a choice between awareness and delusion. We can either enhance or blunt perception. Engaging stories expand consciousness, right? On the other hand, prolonged exposure to mediocrity tends to narrow and limit understanding. Schlock art can be either unintentional or deliberate. The paranoid set, myself included, see most mainstream movies as mediocre by design. They are ignorance machines. Filmmakers in the studio system apparently are trained to make shitty choices. Whoops, talk about cliche. Here I am boiling everything down to an epic struggle between the powers of light and darkness. It's convenient to point to something and say, no! And maybe that's a starting point for defining what's worthy. Snip, I'd like to make art that awakens. It's not enough to just flip what's served up by oppressor culture. I don't want to define myself in contrast, but by discovery. There's great hunks of the human experience missing, and my aim's to reclaim them. Hints of an emerging cosmology? Enough with the bluster. Let's get down to cases. God only takes the stage in disguise. The projector in Avenues, or ICAR, is a lovely example. The changing colors of the slides spill onto the face of the executive. This creates a connection between the synthetic slide and the live-action talent. They are in the same room. It is a relationship that is perfectly obvious once established. It's not even recognized as an effect. To merge elements into a coherent unity, that's a primary principle. It's hardly worth stating that less is more. A slight intervention is less work than a major intervention and creates fewer complications. Adding variables decreases predictability, slows digital processing, and clogs human cognition. There's a step beyond less is more, though. Let's call it elegance. An elegant solution does much with little in a way that's thrilling and even profound. It's evidence of humans in tune, encouraging to anyone paying attention. Elegance reminds us of our higher natures, the wonder that we could be. Another principle, we practice less is more and aspire to elegance. Perfection rejection is yet another principle, which stated proactively would be the quest for good enough. Constant application keeps the project moving forward. Snip. The primo principle is identifying what experiences and techniques intrigue. What kinds of projects would be fun? The energy generated by following bliss is infinite, but in the past I've gotten confused and lost track of what really matters. The price of freedom is constant vigilance. Tucked into the pragmatic, there are lovely hints here of what I would know. In my pondering, I almost knew. So exciting. And oh, so action-oriented. Nothing gets done without my two hands, right? Two hands dancing in a great swirl of stuff. I am making fun of myself here. Optimal hand dancing is a conjuring of the unseen, an invitation. If the showing up was limited to what I personally touched, creation would be hard work. Looking back at 2011, let's pretend that action is all there is. So where's the optimal next action? Where should I attend? There has to be a plan, but the best part of the plan is the pondering of the plan. In the summer of 2011, Daughter of God is 26 minutes and 40 seconds, too long to be a short and too short to be a feature. Cutting the running time in half was the obvious solution. But how? Dog post-production meeting, posted on August 7th, 2011 by Dan from holyboners.com. After updating the archive's catalog the last couple of days, 40 terabytes worth, I was finally ready to crack the dog project this morning. Upon reviewing the major sequences, I had a series of epiphanies. Inventory. Cataloging the possibilities will facilitate good decisions. Along with the main acts, there are elements of backstory, exposition, plot nuance, character development, premise, world mechanics. After principal production, I found many facets of my story to explore. There's quite an inventory. Unfortunately, the interface of Final Cut Pro is like looking down a tube. It's too narrow to see everything, to visualize the relationships between scenes. I need peripheral vision. There's index cards, certainly, but I'd also like to have images of the scenes to spread over a bulletin board. The process of printing visuals for every major moment will build my inner inventory, hook the neurons up. I edit. It's an old adage. A movie is made three times, once with the script, twice with the production, and thrice with the edit. I might argue that SFX, VFX, is a fourth movie, motion graphics, Foley, etc. But let's keep it simple. There's not only a fourth movie, VFX, but a fifth, distribution. Hitchcock faked us out. Since I wrote and shot Dog, I might have fixated on those achievements and forgotten that there was a new movie to make. What is the story that the edit will tell? Now I'm fresh and feeling very free, ready to dance and deliver. I'm excited to re-engage with the content and extract the magic. And guess what? There is magic! Wow! I made lots of mistakes on location. And coupled with the usual unforeseen catastrophes, the raw material isn't ideal. Welcome to my first film. Even so, I must say, there are moments. Enough, I think. Maybe just. Milestones. The current cut is 26:40 in length. For film festivals, a working edit of approximately 12 minutes is the grail. How to get there? 1. Feeling like an editor, and 2. Establishing inner and outer inventory are key. Another strategy is to limber up with an audacious exercise, cutting a 3-minute version. To make this fly, only the essential elements can survive. If I can bust it down to 3 minutes, then 12 minutes will feel like extravagance. I'll start with revisiting the actual script. What's essential to the story? Any fat? Simplify. August 6th is drawing to a close. By Wednesday, August 10th, I'll have my 3-minute version. That's 3 days or a minute per day. The next objective is to complete the inventory by August 15th, 8 days from now. With the inventory in place, I can then begin the 12-minute cut using placeholders for SFX elements. I want a working version by September 5th. I may then take a short break and visit New York City for a week. After all this, I'll project the next set of milestones. The remainder of September will probably be dedicated to testing with anonymous audiences. Depending on the results, I'll either do another edit iteration or move on to SFX. Faisal in the house. Faisal Azam has generously offered to produce Dog, which basically means riding herd on me. We talked on the phone today, and he gave me the green light on these deliverables. 3-minute version, here we come. Dog Resurrection, posted on August 14th, 2011 by Dan from holyboners.com. She's back. Daughter of God is in the house. 3 minutes, 30 seconds. The first objective was to post a micro version of the story, about 3 minutes, by Wednesday, August 10th. Between Sunday, August 7th and Wednesday, August 10th, I was able to dedicate 11 hours to extracting the essential moments from Acts 1 and 2. The last time I tried to cut Dog down was 2009. While going from 2640 to 12, I'd explored the previously on Dexter approach, borrowing from the recap style of episodic TV, Dog as an orphan episode from a trans-dimensional dramedy. The 3-minute cut was feeling like that, which was fine. Even so, I experimented with adding just enough back to soften the jarring continuity breaks and jump cuts. The final 3:30 version points to a possible hybrid between recap and traditional editorial, an accelerated narrative, sleek. How many shots are needed to depict action? Less than one. What is needed to feel flow? Can I develop a hand-cranked compression algorithm for cognitive coherence? Imagine distilling a story down to essential information-rich packets streaming across the screen. To be continued. Two versions were posted by 8 p.m. on August 10th. The No Frills 330 cut and a 520 version with an Uncle Joe beginning and ending tacked on. Feeling like an editor means feeling competent and inspired. Reacquainting myself with the material to the point where I could pull off a 3-minute version has been exhilarating. Though there are gaffes, blunders, and horrible errors to deal with in Dog, I know I can find a way. This confidence is both authentic and vital. Finishing a first film is tough, especially 5 years after shooting. Every aspect of the plan should generate energy and enthusiasm. Momentum is everything. The 3-minute cut illustrated how a comprehensive inventory is clearly the next step. I'll want a full palette. What I don't have, I can make, but there's no point remaking what already exists. It's amazing how many intriguing exploits I discovered rooting through the archives. Cutting the project down to 3 minutes showed the way. The 12-minute cut now feels totally doable, especially since I have the sleek technique in my toolbox. I know the 330 is going to be the basis of longer cuts, as the 520 illustrates. I could even do several 3-minute variants, just to be sure I've got the best of all possible cores. Faisal, out of the house. On Thursday, August 11th, a slight snafu. After Faisal had checked out the shorts, he and I had a rather rushed and one-sided conversation. I was excited to share my lessons from the latest achievement, what the 3-minute edit suggested for the future, and why I was so energized to be back in the saddle. Rather than listen and get the report, or rapport, Faisal started giving unsolicited, creative opinions. Thus was revealed our mutual mistake. We hadn't clearly defined the producer's job description in writing. Snip. Geez, how many times do I need to get my ass kicked about contracts, letters of agreements, and the like? Snip. 9 months later, what I wanted and what Faisal was offering were completely at odds. So, I fired him. Stepping up as producer pro tem is El Carne Loco. He's been building sweat equity on Dog since its inception. 2017 again. Who was El Carne Loco? Me! Yo soy El Carne Loco. I wanted to have the conversation I was looking forward to having with Faisal to soothe out any residual trauma from jettisoning him and further stoke my rekindled motivation. I imagined a conversation between myself and my ideal vortex version of a producer. A transcription of pro tem producer El Carne Loco's interview with director Dan Kelly regarding Daughter of God's first milestone completion in 2011. Posted on August 14th, 2011 by Dan from holyboners.com.
El Carne Loco, regarding the 3-minute version, what do you feel was accomplished? Did it meet your expectations? What did you learn? Does it bring you closer to completion?
Dan Kelly, I expected the 3-minute edit to open up a window on the 12-minute edit. 12 minutes is 4 times longer than 3 minutes, after all, so if I could extract a 3-minute core, that might tell me something about how to achieve 12 minutes elegantly. Certainly, my expectations were met and exceeded. Not only did I extract a core, I also stumbled onto a technique I'm calling sleek. By adding back tiny chunks of content, the core started to become much more than a recap of last week's episode. This isn't a huge leap. There's an awful trend in big-budget fight and chase scenes where everything is happening so fast you have no idea what's happening, and somehow that's becoming stylistically acceptable. What I'm proposing is a visual dynamic that's chopped and accelerated, but at the same time comprehensible and relevant. This reminds me of Marc Garanger's Regard for the Planet, 1989, which was a huge influence. So, not only do I see how I might achieve a powerful 12-minute cut, it feels very doable. It's not scary anymore. Perhaps the answer has been percolating for the past few years and was ready to pop out. Also, I was reviewing sequences and tinkering with the footage before I cut the 330 and made a prototype opening that emphasizes the character of Uncle Joe. He's watching all the other characters via a remote viewing app on his personal geek spy thingy. I tacked that onto the beginning and then bookended with another surveillance shot at the end. This new version was 520, and it really snaps the middle two acts into focus. It's pretty clear that if I reinsert a bit of exposition between the two acts, like Christina's infamous clothing dance, I'll have a functional framework.
After I get the inventory in place, I'll be ready to rough in all the components of the 12-minute structure. It's kind of hard to believe I'm saying this, but I think 2 weeks is a reasonable time to execute the final cut. Sans motion graphics, of course.
El carne loco. You have a milestone of having the comprehensive inventory ready by August 15th. That's 2 days away.
Dan Kelly. Probably I'll miss it. Snip. I'm going to push the inventory milestone back 5 days to August 20th, which could delay the delivery of the final cut to around September 7th. I'm going to say September 4th, because I have a hot date on September 5th, and I'd like to have my plate clear.
El carne loco. Why is the comprehensive inventory importante? Why not just dive right into the final cut?
Dan Kelly. Why not cook an omelet without eggs and butter? If there's one thing I've learned about sailing Hobie Cats in the open water, it's this. Get organized and be prepared. Your life might depend on it. Ditto for making movies. While sorting through the dog archive last week, I found wads of clever little experiments. There's tons of discarded takes that I really ought to review. There might be a few seconds of cutaway that could save my life. By making the inventory, I'll have the content bright and big in short-term memory. I'll know just where to put my hands on it drive-wise. With instant access, I can really move. My dreams will be full of dog, and I'll wake up with 10 ways to resolve any riddle. Here's another way to look at it. Imagine a swimming pool full of water. If you magically took all the hydrogen away, you could sit on the bottom of that pool and breathe the oxygen. But could you brew a fine porter?
El carne loco. That last part was a little slushed, but it's getting late. Last question. What's the inventory consist of specifically?
Dan Kelly. Says you. I'll identify and describe the main sequences. Some of these contain unique combinations of components, so I'll make a brief analysis of those. For example, the shortwave radio broadcasts might be under a post-apocalyptic montage in one sequence and under Christina changing in another. It's worthwhile to review what the benefits and drawbacks are of both approaches, what connections they might suggest, etc. I'll identify the strongest alternative takes of Acts 1 and 2 and riff on what they might be good for. I want to find every dog analysis and publish them on the blog. There's supplemental material, B-roll, that ought to be reviewed and described. I'll have to revise the motion graphics and VFX roster and figure out if anything can be intelligently contracted to other artists. I was also thinking of creating a printed reference Bible that could be deployed on the bulletin board for rapid visualization as a supplement to standard index cards. That about covers it. 2017 again. So, Daughter of God started out as a 10-minute movie, ballooned to 2640, then got pruned down to 3 minutes? Haven't you been saying, Dan Kelly, that Daughter of God is now a featurette, like 40-plus minutes long? If you could do the whole thing in 3 minutes, what's the point of an extra 37 minutes? Do we listen to music just to hear the final crashing chord? Do we watch movies with a hot friend just to get to the credits? Likely you're going to kiss your hot friend during the movie. I would. Is the point of kissing to finish kissing? To accomplish kissing? We live in a time-based experience. If there's any point to all of this, maybe it's just to fill up the time with loveliness. You've been listening to the Daughter
Podcast,
episode 028, Resurrection. She's back, and we're filling up our shared time with the loveliness of this podcast. We leave dogs sitting up on the slab, radiant with new life. Next week, she'll roll the stone back, knock the dust off her cloak, and go looking for a nice cup of Sencha green tea. In the meantime, find your own new life, transcend conditions, and be more you than ever.
El carne loco. That last part was a little slushed, but it's getting late. Last question.
We're done! That's it, done! And now we'll play one more song. It's kind of in the wrong spot for playing guitar. It's great for talking. Talking? But maybe not for playing guitar. Maybe not. Unless I stood up. Then I'm out of camera. Oh, it's so confusing. Wait, gotta check my tea.